everyone. Welcome back to the Hall Pass Podcast. This is our Season 1, Episode 9. Today, we're going to be delving into, finally, the UC application. So just a little bit about the UC application before we get started. What is the UC application? Actually, we had a question from one of our students who sent us an email, one of our listeners, I guess, and they said, how come the UC application doesn't just use the common application? Why do I, you know, I live in California. Why do I have to use the UC application if I'm filling out the common application? So short answer to that is the UC application was actually created for California residents specifically to help close the achievement gap specifically for lower income applicants. So the UC application will only go to the UC schools, and a lot of other colleges do this. For example, University of Texas schools, they also have their own UT application as well. And so because it's specifically for in-state residents, that's why the UC application was created, and that's why you have to fill out both the UC app and the Common App. Some other general information about the UC application in terms of requirements. All of the UC campuses are going to have the same minimum requirements for freshmen to ensure that all students are prepared to be academically successful at the university, which means that, you know, UC San Diego and UC Berkeley and UCLA, they're all going to have the same requirements as they do for UC Riverside or UC Merced. In terms of the selection process, the selection is a process at each campus, which is necessary when more applicants apply to a campus than a campus can admit and enroll, which is happening at all universities, not just UCs. And each UC campus evaluates applicants beyond just their GPA and test scores. So UCs do pride themselves on being a holistic review process to really find the applicants that are best suited for their university. Who else is in your applicant pool? Who else are you competing against? So you are not just applying applying with students that are at your school or community, but you're also applying with students from all parts of California, the United States, from other countries whose backgrounds may be similar or different from your own. The UC receives applications from students with a variety of attributes, you know, people who live in small rural towns and larger areas. And this is the case, again, for the Common Application as well. But I just wanted to reiterate that the UC application, you're not competing just against students in California. They're really from all over the place, even the world. And the other thing I wanted to mention really quickly in terms of the UC application is that the campuses are independent of one another. So when they're making their decisions, when they're reviewing their applications, they are reviewing it independently. So UC Berkeley, they have their own admissions committee. UCLA has their own admissions committee. So everyone has their own committee and they make their own decisions and they're independent of one another. They're not going to, UC Berkeley is not going to call UCLA and say, hey, did you accept this student? And try to find out information about their student. They are all independent. So we're going to go into the UC application a little bit more today. Welcome back, everyone.
Hey.
Hola.
Today we have Punkage back from Cabo. How was Cabo, Punkage?
It was awesome. It was fun. Good weather, good family time at the pool, good margaritas, good frijoles.
Oh, frijoles.
Means refried beans for those. I think they cook them differently there. It was like, I think they cook them in real lard. And so it's super tasty and super fattening. So I gained some weight, though, but
sounds
it was
awesome.
Fun.
Punkage looks a little bit tanner for those of you who are just listening.
But I'm Indian. I'm always tan.
Oh, yeah, that's true. He's always brown. But we're happy. We're happy that you're back, Punkage, because we missed your dad jokes. We also have Jason back for this episode.
I had so much fun, I had to come back again.
Jay is still on his business trip. He's in Korea having a lot of fun and enjoying the I guess, environment there. So
and the dogs. Enjoying the dogs of Shanghai.
That was Shanghai, yes. So we
miss you, Jay.
We'll ask him all about his trip when he comes back. So let's go into the UC application. What are the components of the UC app? I do want to mention just really quickly that the UC app and the Common App have very similar criteria. So we're going to highlight some of the areas that are different between the Common App and the UC application. If you missed our episode on the UC application, you can go back to our Season 1 episode. The Common Application. You can go back to our Season 1 Episode 7, and that we're talking all about the Common Application. But let's go into the UC app. So what are some of the components of the UC app? So to start?
as your resident specialist in the basic information, I'm back again here to talk about how to fill out your personal information. So standard standard stuff per usual. So you just fill out all the stuff that's super basic, just your address, where you're from, your name, citizenship, what languages you speak, all that stuff. It's nothing. You're not being quizzed here. It's just basic information and pretty much common sense at this point.
There is a residency portion of it that asks, did you attend a California high school for 3 or more years? And will you graduate from a California high school? And this is an important element of the UC application, as you know, that the UCs were created, like I mentioned, for UC residents. So they do want to know if you're going to a high school in California. Are you a boarding school student? Are you an international student, et cetera? Okay, what's up next?
Yep, so you touched on it, Jenny, in the beginning, where the application is not, it's very similar to the Common App, but there are separate sections. And the reason why UCs have their own application is pretty much for the families, for the income. They actually ask you about your family's annual gross income. But they ask you family size. Again, these are demographical information things. These are things for statistics, for publishing. But because it's a California state school program, they want to close that educational gap between high income, low income. And so that income factor does come into play. With the Common App, they have a separate FAFSA and they don't ask the income equation. It doesn't get evaluated as much as here in the UC application. So it's just interesting to be mindful of that with the UC app.
You still do have to fill out the FAFSA, by the way, for the UC app. But like Punk is just saying, it does kind of add that element into the application as well. So on top of that, just piggybacking off of his income kind of information, the UC application has a pretty large section for scholarships. And again, same sentiment as Punkage just mentioned. It's really to give students an opportunity, especially in lower income areas, to give students an opportunity to get those scholarships. And because UCs are state funded and government funded, you're able to dip into some of that free money. And so for the scholarships, you're not going to be looked down upon by admissions if you put in more scholarships. In fact, if you fit that criteria in the scholarship section, when they ask you about your academic major, your career plans, your ethnicity, things like that, fill it out. You know, the more money you can get to go to college for free, that the better it is.
And especially for those students who are not citizens or residents of California, if they're applying to the UCs, you're very likely not going to be getting much financial aid. So if you can apply for these scholarships, you should definitely take advantage of it.
That's a great point. Okay, let's go to campuses and majors.
All right, so this is the part where you actually select what UC campuses you are applying to. And there are 9 UC schools in the UC system. And so you can just pretty much check off the boxes from UC Berkeley to UCLA to UC Davis all the way down to UC San Diego. And each one you pick will have its own separate fee. So last year it was $70. I don't know how much it'll be to apply to each separate school this year, but probably won't be too much higher than that. Probably remain about 70. The only school that you will have to do something different other than kind of check the box is UC San Diego, which will then give you sort of a drop-down menu. So UC San Diego has 6 separate colleges that you will have to rank in order of 1 to 6 of which one you want to go to. And you can do a little bit of research on each of those 6 to determine your rankings. And for each of those schools, you'll also have to list what your prospective major will be for each of them. So say UC Davis, for example, has a really good kinesiology program and you want to go there, go ahead and major in kinesiology at UC Davis. But if you want to do sociology at UCLA, that's where you would just differentiate that.
Yep. And so also just to talk about the UC San Diego's campuses, they do have 6 colleges, like Travis mentioned, and each of them have different graduation requirements. So if you're a student who wants to go into engineering, you probably want to take a little bit more math and science courses. There will be a college for that in the UC San Diego campus. So that's how you might want to do the research to choose which colleges might be a good fit for you. And yes, you can diversify the majors that you would choose for each of the colleges of the UC campuses.
Just, Oh, sorry. Just be a little bit careful, because one of the essays that they allow you to write about in the UC essay prompts is for you to talk about an academic subject that you're passionate about, and then to perhaps talk about like what major you might want to pursue if you were to go to college. If you talk about a specific major in that essay, which will be read by every admissions officer from the UCs that you end up applying to, and then you choose a different major for one or more of these colleges and it doesn't align with the essay that you wrote, well, then that could be somewhat of an issue.
Yeah, and I think to add to that, you've probably, and hopefully the students that we work with, have been carefully crafting their resume, their activities to show a passion for a certain major. So switching majors between schools might be a little bit challenging, especially if you've taken this approach.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the UC application gets a little bit tricky, a little bit different than the common application, because the UC application do ask for academic history starting from your 7th and 8th grade that fulfill the A through G requirements. I do want to mention just really quickly what A through G requirements are. So I mentioned earlier that the UC application, the UC campuses have minimum requirements that they would like you to be completed before you apply, and those are called A through G requirements or A through G courses. And so you have to fill out your academic history on the application starting from your 7th and 8th grade. For example, if you took a course that hits the A through G requirements, like algebra in 7th grade, algebra 1 in 7th grade, or you took Spanish 1 in 7th grade, those would be part of your academic history in 7th and 8th grade. A through G courses, to be considered for admissions, you have to complete 15 year-long high school courses with a grade of C or better at least 11 of them prior to your senior year. And the A through G courses are like: letter A stands for history, B stands for English, C stands for mathematics, so on and so forth. If you just type in A through G requirements on Google for UCs, then it'll give you a list of all of the requirements that you need to do. Keep in mind that taking approved high school A through G courses isn't the only way to satisfy these requirements, actually. You can also meet them by completing college courses or earning certain scores on the SAT, AP, or IB. So taking that also fulfills the A through G requirements, so you can just kind of read up on those very specifically. Now, the part that gets a little bit more tricky is the courses other than A through G and how you're supposed to do that. On the UC application section, they have activities, awards, and courses other than A through G.
Yeah, so this is when the application starts getting a little bit more holistic. I know you've heard the other counselors speaking about a holistic approach to college admissions, and this is where you can really start showing the other aspects of yourself as an applicant. So when we talk about other courses that are non-A through G, we're talking about foreign language, religious courses. We're not talking about PE or teacher assistant, but Jenny mentioned college courses that could also fall into this category. For our activities, awards, and courses, we have 6 different sections, and in each of those sections, we have 5 slots for you to put information. So what I'm looking for in my students at this point is some sort of passion. I'm trying to find something that really shows the student is passionate. As I talked about last week, passionate people succeed. We find this in examples all over the world. So if I have a student who's interested in English, I'm looking for them to take a creative writing course at a local community college. I'm looking for them to enter writing competitions to win awards. I'm looking for them to intern at a local newspaper, potentially join some clubs at their school that would outline a passion for English. So creative writing, journalism, school newspaper, yearbook, things like that. One of my most recent courses that are becoming more and more popular at schools is AP Capstone. So I don't know if anyone wants to touch on this with a personal anecdote, but AP Capstone would be where you get to do your own research, which I think is really valuable, especially with competitions like MIT Inspire, other competitions students can enter.
So I just want to say, for non-A through G courses, Jason said like language, but language is an A through G course. A non-A through G course is like leadership. So if you have ASB or something like that, and it counts as a class. I know a lot of high schools also have like mock trial as a class.
Academic decathlon.
Or academic decathlon as a class. And those would be non-A through G course. And also if you go to like a religious school or a school that offers like Bible study or something like that, that would also be a non-A through G course as well. But AP Capstone, yeah, a lot more high schools are starting to do AP Capstone. My high school didn't provide one when I was in high school, but this is definitely an option and could be considered a non-A through G course. So in addition to that, you know, in the this activities and awards section, they also ask about educational prep programs.
Yeah, so educational prep programs, these are typically the summer institute or summer programs that you may or may not have gone to. The colleges, the UC colleges, they get, you know, tiered higher, like Berkeley, UCLA, San Diego. They're very tough to get into. They're more competitive. So this is where the educational prep program section kind of plays a part. They want to see if you've gone to maybe a Yale, you know, Young Global Scholars program, or maybe a Stanford National Forensic Institute's program, or some program that will help you understand like the college lifestyle, the dorm life, you know, what to expect educationally. So the UC application provides a list of the most common ones, but if you don't find yours there, you can manually enter any of the programs that you put or you went to.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And then beyond educational prep programs, they also ask about volunteer and community service.
Yeah, so they're looking for commitment, and they're looking for dedication through your volunteering and community service. What I'm actually looking for in my students is how have they influenced their community or their own family. Colleges these days, smart students are a dime a dozen. There's a ton of smart students all over the world. And unfortunately, there's not enough room at all of these colleges just for smart students. So schools like Stanford, Princeton, Yale, Harvard, they're already great schools. But the reason they are consistently among the top 10 is because they're always improving. So they're looking for students who have impacted their community, impacted their family. And one of the best ways to do this is through volunteering. I always say the best predictor of the future is the past. So if a student has made a big impact in their community on a local stage, then when they go to Stanford, it's a good bet that they can make a big impact at Stanford.
And what are some ways that students can get involved in the community then? Or I guess, what are some of the most effective ways? Because I know at this point, just reading up on what admissions officers are saying is that like the mission trip is almost becoming cliche at this point.
Yeah. So I think a really good check for yourself is, can anyone do this? So if you're sitting at a soup kitchen and you're handing out soup for 500 hours, anyone can really go and do that. What I would urge students to do is think about how you can take that activity to the next level. So if you're working at a soup kitchen, there's a lot of homeless people. A current student that I'm working with mentioned that he wants to start a program that helps homeless people develop resumes. So he goes there with his laptop, he helps them develop resumes, and then he prints them out. And then the next time he goes, he hands them out. So yeah, he's handing out food, but he also is adding an additional service that actually impacts the community.
Cool. I really like that. It's a great idea. So same thing, you know, and I think with volunteer and community service, yeah, homeless people need help. You know, a lot of these like soup kitchens, they need help. And I think beyond just the fact that like you're one of the only people that can do it, when you go there, you know, do you feel like you're genuinely making a difference? Like I have another student who did soup kitchen, but they didn't want to scoop the same food over and over again. So they would arrive 2 to 3 hours earlier and cook like a gourmet meal for the homeless people. And that's something that person was so passionate about doing, because just dumping beans and rice on a plate every single day for 500 hours isn't something that they felt like were making a genuine impact. So I think the genuine impact part is the part that you want to definitely consider.
Yeah, so the point is basically the mission trip can still be the mission trip, but if you can find and go the next step, next level, I think it just speaks volumes of like how you think and how you operate as a leader.
Absolutely. Okay, so going down to part of that same section is work experience. And, you know, coming from an Asian family, and I don't know, have any of you guys had jobs when you guys were in high school?
I did.
Yes.
Disneyland.
I started working when I was in eighth grade.
Nice.
14 years old at the local grocery store. I loved it.
Yes, he did.
He made a very funny face. And
wait,
he did
eighth
not
grade?
Love it.
Eighth grade? Aren't there child labor laws?
Yeah, child labor laws.
Well, I was also, so I worked at a golf course, and I was like half caddy and half bag boy, so I'd set up all the carts and stuff for the day, but it also came with a free membership at a country club, so
nice, you know, nice.
Like, it kind of worked out for me.
I'm sure you have a lot of Caddyshack stories.
So many.
Yeah, so a lot of Asian, you know, families, like, you know, I feel like our parents, and when I talk to my students who are also Asian, their parents don't necessarily, they kind of are like, no, I do not want my child to work right now because I'm working for my child right now. And you know, one of the things that I want to hit is that as a high school student, learning to work is a very important part of growing up. And it teaches you responsibility. It teaches you professionalism, which is something that you need to learn eventually. It demonstrates, responsibility and even leadership and time management. And I think it kind of delves into these qualities that are important for high school students to know.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to jump in.
It's okay, Pankaj.
No, but I sort of understand that mentality because I remember my parents' Asian mentality also. They're like, don't get distracted from your grades.
Mm-hmm,
don't.
Exactly.
And so they think that, you know, working will distract you and you may get some B's or C's because you're not focusing your time. You know, but exactly the intangibles of work and learning about responsibility provides another area where your grades can enhance and you learn to manage time better. I think that's what colleges are looking for.
Exactly.
I think just on the flip side of that, there is some merit for certain students that might be struggling a lot in schools and like they just kind of want to go out and work and start earning money. I think at that point, we might have to start considering if that is a good idea. If they're really busy outside of school already studying for tests and they're struggling in school, maybe they should just kind of be focusing on their classes rather than going out and taking up a part-time job, for example.
Mm-hmm. I think, though, if you are one of those students, and I get these all the time, students that are just like, I don't learn like any hands-on, you know, skills or activities, like working is the best thing to do that, right? Because you learn how to budget, right? My dad, he said, well, why don't you put 10% of your money away for savings? And I was like, no, I'm good. And then we went on vacation. I was like, Dad, can I have money? He goes, well, didn't you save any? I was like, no. He goes, okay, let's learn how to budget. And so it just teaches you so many life skills that you'll be able to use later on in the road that I think is so valuable.
And it's also unique. If you're a student, I can't tell you how many applications I see in this section where it says work experience, they say none or zero. But if you're a student who had a consistent part-time job and earned your money and utilized that time to have experiences, I feel like it's very valuable in your application. So during the summer, consider getting a part-time job. I think it's something to look forward to. Okay, and then the other part of that section is the awards and honor section.
Yeah, I think we talked about this in a previous episode, and we mentioned the fact that obviously the awards on a wider level, so statewide, countrywide, even international awards, will indicate a higher level of achievement with significant competition. And so if you have any of these, obviously these are the ones that you want to list in this section. But we have a lot of students that don't have these awards, that don't go to national debate competitions or have statewide, you know, piano awards. And so if you do anything in school, even school-based awards can be meaningful if context is provided. For example, if you have an award for having 250 hours of volunteering and you say like what specifically you did, then that can be valuable. And that's something that colleges like to see. Or even if you have perfect attendance, that can be insightful as well. And so any awards that you can get, whether that is just being on the dean's list or volunteer awards or debate competition tournaments that you've had on a regional level, just any of these that you can put on, you want to show to the admissions officers.
Mm-hmm. The difference, I guess, with a common application is that they ask for specifically academic awards. So they say, you know, we want an academic award, like something that has to do with academics, like debate or academic competitions. But for the UC application, they don't specify that. They don't say our awards and honors in academics. It's actually part of the activities section of the UC application. So you can have awards in there that show like, oh, I got first place in tennis, or, you know, I was a CIF champion in soccer. So that's something that you can do as well.
Two-time sportsmanship award winner right here, AKA your loudest bench warmer.
Nice. And then
award.
Extracurricular activities is the last kind of element of this section on the UC app.
Yeah, I know that you guys touched on this a lot. We even talked about it a little bit last week. So instead of talking about the actual application, I'm going to give a little bit of a timeline for what I look for in my students. So in ninth grade, I'm looking for students to get active. The worst thing you can do as a freshman is nothing. If you find yourself at lunch and you're looking around and you're just sitting there, I 100% guarantee there's a club meeting going on a daily basis. So don't worry necessarily about, you know, your focus or finding your major. Your ninth grade year, find clubs that you like, that you want to commit time to. All too often, I find students who join two clubs their freshman year, they don't like it. 10th grade, they join two more clubs, they don't like it. 11th grade, they join two more clubs. And this process is actually, it damages their chances of leadership, commitment, things like that. So 9th grade, try to get all of that done. You want to explore. 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, I'm looking for commitment so we can develop leadership, make an impact on those clubs, come up with activities, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about extracurricular activities during the Common App.
Oh, and just one last thing. When you are writing these activities on your application, it's not good enough, in my eyes, to write, I was committed for 3 years, I was the president. If you're in a club that's not doing anything, it's not valuable. So you actually have to be doing something in these clubs. So I hear students join, oh, I'm just doing this club to put it on my resume, or I'm just doing it to put it on my college application. Well, college admissions officers are really, really good at their job. They know that you're doing that. So it's not helpful in the long run. So that's a waste of time. So really make sure you're making an impact with your clubs.
Awesome.
So basically, don't put president of the Do Nothing Club.
Yeah.
We do nothing.
Dad joke.
Thank you, Punkage. Mic drop.
We've hit our quota for the day.
Okay, and so the next section after all of that, by the way, the work experience, volunteer community service, awards and honors, extracurricular activities, educational prep programs, that was all a part of the activities and awards section, by the way. And so beyond that is the test scores, and I'm going to kind of delve into the test scores a little bit. So the test scores, they will ask you about ACT, SAT, SAT2 subject tests, APs and IB, TOEFL, some of these other kind of acronyms that I can throw at you guys. So what they want you to do is report the completed test with dates and scores or the planned test date, you know, because the application, UC application is due November 30th. So you may have one that's you're going to take in December or you're going to take in January, or you had taken in November, but your score hasn't come out yet. So you still want to put that in. If an examination was completed more than once, they want you to enter the highest score. So if you've taken the SATs 5 times and, you know, you want to put your highest score of the 5, the UCs only use SAT subject tests, but they are not required. Some of them are recommended for specific programs. For example, if you're going to go into UC Berkeley Engineering, they might require you to take the SAT 2 Math Level 2. So you might want to just check which campuses you're applying to and what their requirements are. But they are not required for every single major at every single UC school. The UC also does not recommend that you use the College Board score choice function because it delays the delivery of test scores, but it doesn't say that you can't do it. So if you want to use score choice for UC, you can. Just make sure that you're ordering the scores early. And just to kind of reiterate, score choice, do any of you guys want to answer what score choice is? Okay. <I'm sorry>. So score choice is exactly what it's saying. You can choose the scores that you want to send. And so you can choose, you know, not to share every single one of your scores in terms of the test that you've taken, but you can choose, pick and choose on College Board which ones you want to send to the colleges. Some colleges will allow you to do this, by the way. For official test scores, UCs do want you to send their official test scores. You only need to send it to one UC campus, and then the UC campuses share that test report with all of the other UC campuses. So you don't have to send it to every single UC campus. And if official scores are or were sent to UC prior to an applicant filling out the admissions process, the UC system will maintain the score for 3 years. So I do have students who have taken like an AP bio in 8th grade. If you had that sent to if you had that sent to UC campus, they might not have it by the time you apply because they only hold it onto it for 3 years. So just keep that in mind. You might not want to send test scores too early. And as we talked about before, you know, the scores for these tests will demonstrate your academic mastery on individual subjects, and they can also satisfy the A through G requirements, as I mentioned earlier. So don't worry about low scores. Technically, UC treats that as neutral, but they do acknowledge that an attempt was made to earn a score. But obviously, the higher the score, the more impact you're going to have on your application to show your capability, your academic capabilities.
I just want to kind of jump in here and give a little advice on test taking. As someone who came from school, and Travis can attest to this too, we didn't really have a college counselor in our life. So basically everything we did was on our own. We learned ourselves. And I just advise people to take advantage of the free resources online, Khan Academy. Take mock exams. Don't take the test before you're ready. We have students take it as early as seventh grade to get into summer programs and as late as, you know, their junior and beginning of senior year. But just really take advantage of mock exams. Try to figure out what your scores mean. Try to figure out your weaknesses, your strengths, because this is really one of the tools that are going to open up a lot of doors for you or close a lot of doors for you.
And he's not kidding. When he says we didn't have any resources for it, we had none. Did you do anything before the SATs, Jay?
I did a little.
I thought you were going to say you prayed.
I mean, that's pretty much all we could do. I mean, I didn't even have, like, my mom bought my older brother an SAT book, and I made fun of him for it. I was like, look at you studying for the SAT. I mean, that was it. So, I mean, the abundance of resources out here is unbelievable. Like, you guys have the opportunity to do really, really well on this. And, like, I honestly didn't even know that all of this existed until I moved out here. I mean, it's the same thing in the South, too. Like, no one cares about the ACT and SAT because there's no resources to study it.
Yeah, it's a different culture out here.
It's because you guys care about SEC football.
SATs.
Not SATs.
Wrong letters.
Well, that was a lot of stereotypes that we just said. But in any case, yeah, so I would definitely agree. What a great advice from Jason. I think starting early and kind of figuring that out. One last important thing I want to mention about the test scores. Official AP and IB test scores for UC campuses are not required until after they have been accepted. So the only thing that you really do have to send to a UC campus, just one UC campus, are your SATs, SAT2s, subject test scores, or ACT. Everything else, like your APs and IB, your TOEFL also needs to be sent, but your AP and IB test scores do not need to be sent until you are accepted into the school, and then they will ask you to send.
So basically, it's self-report on the application.
Yep.
You get accepted, and then you can send the officials.
Exactly. Yeah. Perfect. And then the last part of the UC application is kind of the one that has the most changes so far, I feel like. And so we'll kind of delve into that a little bit. So they call it the personal insight questions, but it's actually essays, pretty much, you know, personal statements or essays.
We'll just call them the UC essays.
Yes.
So these actually changed starting last year. Last year, there were two essays you had to write, and they gave you a maximum of 1,000 words to write. Starting this past year, they are now giving you 8 different prompts to choose from, and you have to write on 4 of them. And they give you a maximum of 350 words to write for each of those essays. And I mentioned this in a previous episode too, but again, we usually recommend, because this 350 words is not a lot of space, take advantage of that and try to reach as close to that maximum as you possibly can. But again, we've read great essays that are sometimes well below that limit. But again, try to reach that maximum. All questions have equal value in the admission selection process. So for applicants, there isn't any advantage or disadvantage to choosing certain questions over others. So simply pick the questions that you're most comfortable answering or that you feel like will present you in the most unique light. And students can also express who they are and what matters to them, not only through the questions that they choose to answer, but also, and importantly, how they respond to the questions themselves. So again, just have some fun with this, right? This is an opportunity for you to show them not just how well you write, but also what kind of student you are, what kind of experiences you've had in the past, and the lessons that you've gained throughout the past few years.
And one of the things that we usually recommend that you do too is, so I'm assuming that most of you guys who are applying to UCs are also going to be applying to some schools that are on the Common App. So because your UCs don't have a personal statement, what you can do is write your UC essays first, take the one that's best, and then expand on that to use for your Common App personal statement. That's one of the things that we always recommend for our students to do, because a lot of the times, I mean, the UC, you have 8 questions. So at least one of those 8 you're going to feel passionate about writing about that will turn into a pretty solid personal statement. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious though, Richard, so which format do you think was better? The 2 questions for 1,000 words or 4 questions, 350 each?
Yeah, I mean, for the counselors, I feel like it's a lot easier just having to brainstorm for two essays, obviously. And so, you know, working with so many different students and having to brainstorm new ideas with them and coming up with four different topics for each and every student we work with, that's somewhat of a hassle. But I can definitely see the benefit of doing it this way, having four different topics and allowing students to write 350 words per topic. It really gets us to get a broad overview of the student, which I feel like maybe two essays itself doesn't really give you the opportunity to do.
And I think that you hit on it by saying four different topics a number of times there. So you have the opportunity to show four different sides of yourself. Mm-hmm. You also have the opportunity to shoot yourself in the foot a little bit and write about the same thing four different times.
Yeah, and we have students like that who feel like, you know, I haven't had any experiences. Can I just talk about, you know, cheerleading for two of my essays? And if that doesn't show us a different side of who you are and, you know, what you've learned in the past few years, then that you're kind of wasting that space, something, an area for college admissions officers to be able to learn more about you.
And I think that essays are so important because it's really, barring an interview, it's the only time you'll be able to show your genuine, authentic personality, right? I mean, everything else is just sort of numbers and achievements and accolades and awards, but this is your chance to really show who you are, what I plan to do here, where I've been, what I have done, and what your future looks like. So let your personality shine a little bit. Like Richard said, have a little fun with these. These aren't English essays. Mm-hmm. This is kind of an exercise in creative writing. I mean, it's almost conversational in a way. Because as we go over with our students, the admissions committee, they read them aloud, right? So if they're trying to read them aloud and you have like 10, 15 letter words in a row, like that's not going to be too great, right? You're just having a conversation with the admissions officers, telling them who you are and what you're about.
Yeah, so because this is such a significant part of the application, again, our advice is start early. Don't do this at the very last minute. It's going to be very difficult to do four essays in the span of even 1 month. And so give yourself a good amount of time to work on these essays and definitely, again, review them by yourself, get them peer reviewed as many times as you possibly can. You want to just make sure that this is something that you turn in your best quality work for these schools.
Absolutely. What would you say is the most the average amount of drafting you'll go through before you get like a really good draft? Because I would say a lot of times, like, you'll brainstorm with a student and the first ideas will honestly most of the time be just like kind of crap. And then you're like, okay, now we have to dig one layer deeper.
Yeah.
And then you do it again. You dig one layer deeper. I think like the fourth or fifth time you go around is when you start to finally get to something pretty quality.
I think definitely your mileage may vary depending on the student. So I've had students say, like, this is my first draft, and I read through it, and it sounds like they went through it multiple times. It's so good, and it's just their first draft. Mm-hmm. And then I have students, and I would say, like, be the majority of students that we work with that turn in questionable work, right? Something that they definitely, you know, should have been working on a little bit harder.
We want names.
Yeah, we won't say names. And sometimes, yeah, they go through multiple drafts, sometimes more than five, even more than 10. So it really depends on the students.
Yeah, so I think as a parent, you may be wondering, like, how can I help my student prepare for these essays? And we talked about it earlier, shallow activities, shallow volunteer experiences, they're not helpful. They're not helpful on your resume. They're not helpful on your application. They're certainly not helpful for essay questions. So if you have a freshman or a middle schooler, have them gain experiences, because that's what you talk about on your college application. You talk about the experience, or your college essays, you talk about your experiences. So if you have too many shallow activities, you don't have anything to talk about, and then you end up writing multiple essays about the same topic.
We'll have a full-on essay podcast.
Sorry, because
I know. Travis loves talking about essays.
A lot to say about
he
it.
Is an essay specialist, but we will have an entire podcast just for that. So let's go around really quickly and just do like last-minute UC application tips that you have for students. We'll start with Punky.
Yeah. So, you know, I was honing in on what you said earlier about the A through G. Was it A through G or A through F?
A through G,
yeah. A lot of times I've seen students that have missed a course, or they got a really bad grade, or they don't have a good transcript in high school. And, you know, UC's, as you mentioned earlier, you have to meet a certain minimum requirement on the coursework that you have to do. So if you haven't achieved that, either in your scores or your grades or meeting one of the A through G courses, you can take community college. And the California Community College system, they're feeder programs into the UC schools. And many students I've come across in the past have gone to community college for a year or two. They save on that tuition. They save some money, and they get into Berkeley, and they end up graduating with a Berkeley degree. 5 years from when you graduate, no employer is going to wonder why you went to a community college. You know, if you want to attack, let's say, Berkeley or San Diego or UCLA and get a degree from those schools, and you sort of had some hiccups in high school, you can look at the community college approach. There's a really robust system in California that's, you know, worthy of a look if you're in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Other tips?
I think last year, 119,000 people applied to UCLA, which is quite a lot, which is why admissions officers use a holistic view when choosing who they're going to accept and who they're going to pass on. So I'd really just preach, you know, your 3.8 GPA, your 3.9 GPA, even your perfect SAT score isn't going to be the reason why you're accepted. It's going to be the holistic approach, the things you do outside of school. So my advice is just stand out the best you can, because there's a lot of applicants and more coming.
Yeah, competition's getting fierce in the UC department.
You said that with some emphasis.
My baby right now is going to have a very difficult time once it's born to go to college. Other tips?
Yeah, I guess more in terms of just whether or not students are considering, should I even try applying to the UCs? I don't know if I want to go to a public school. I would say just look into it. Do your research on these schools. Again, there are 9 different UC campuses. And so, yes, they might be public schools, but all of them are very unique in terms of what they offer and what kind of schools they are overall. And so just look at them, kind of realize that this is a great opportunity, especially for residents of California, to spend much less money attending a school rather than going out of state or attending a private school and still get a great education. And so just, again, take your time as you look through these schools.
Yeah, a lot of the UCs are in the top 30, top 35, you know, on the U.S. News. So take advantage. Travis?
I would say just start your essays early, and I'll cut myself off there before I get the ball rolling.
Yeah, the last thing I want to say really quickly is, like, go visit a UC campus. You know, UCs do tours all throughout the school year, and, you know, if you're someone who lives close to UCLA or UC Berkeley or UC San Diego, go visit them. Take a weekend trip and kind of see what you like. You know, I went to UCLA, and so did Richard, and, you know, that's our alma mater, and we bleed blue and gold. We love our experiences at UCLA, and I really wouldn't take them back. You know, if I had a chance, I'd probably go to that school again.
You know, I remember taking a college tour at Berkeley, and I saw a naked man on a bicycle.
Thank you, Punk. Thank you,
Punk. Bye, guys.
So just a quick thing. So thank you all of you guys for telling us about UCs and telling us that Funkage went to UC Berkeley and had a really interesting experience.
It's an interesting campus.
Yeah, Northern California.
Interesting experience. Just one quick question from our listeners. We did get an email, someone asking us, how many colleges should I try to apply to? You know, at Admission Masters, we separate colleges into 4 categories: reach, possible, probable, and safety. And I try to tell students, like, you know, try to do 4 in each category. You know, anywhere between 10, 12, maybe 15 colleges is a good number to apply to. The Common Application does let you apply to 20 colleges on the Common App alone. So I feel like that's a lot of colleges, you know, and a lot of essays that you might have to write, and a lot of money also. So I don't know if that's something that you want to consider. But I would say 12 to 15 is probably a really good number of colleges to apply to.
Who applied to the most in this room? I'm at 2.
I applied to 3.
I applied to 5.
5?
3?
4.
Is it? So it's an upward trend then, right?
I think I won. I applied to 12.
To 12.
He's also the youngest,
You applied
sense.
To 4?
5. 3.
A 3? Wow.
3, yeah. Okay, so thank you so much for listening to Season 1, Episode 9. By the way, times are changing. Times are changing. This was our final episode of Season 1. We're going to take a week break. So next week, we are not going to have an episode. I know. Don't be sad, all of you listeners who have been following us. But tune in on May 3rd, which is Wednesday, for our Season 2, Episode 1, where we are going to delve into more specific elements of the college admissions and application processes. Season one was a little bit more general information, kind of 101 almost, things that you might want to know about college admissions and just high school. And now season 2, we're going to delve into more specifics involving that. So it should be a lot more fun. If you missed any of our episodes, you can find it on iTunes or www.thehallpasspodcast.com. And again, we would love for you to send us an email of general topics and questions you might want us to cover in our podcast at...
thehallpasspodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you so much for thank you so much for following us on season one, and we will see you on May 3rd. Bye.
Adios.
See ya.